The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see Brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Well, pivot has been the business buzzword of the pandemic. After the last recession, our next guest underwent a severe pivot that has proved to be very profitable. Sonia Deasy and her husband, Porrig, left behind their high-end photography business and set up a skincare brand, Pestle and Mortar, now employing 20 people and selling in over 25 countries. Their profits this year are up 30% on last year. Sonia, you're very welcome to the programme. Let's go to your own personal story first. Your parents came here from Punjab in India in the 1970s. Why did they decide on moving to Ireland?
I think Ireland because the climate was so good. So it never gets too
hot and never
gets too cold. The education system. So being Indian, we are very much into, or he was very much into education. He knew he wanted to have a family and he knew that education was really important to him.
So what about your mam then? Was she keen on the idea of moving to Ireland?
Back then, this would have been, say, 55 years ago, my parents had an arranged marriage. So my mom, the first time she saw my dad was on their wedding day. So it would have been a very traditional marriage. And should I say that she probably didn't have much say in where she moved to.
Now, moving from India at that time, where did your dad first go first and how did he get a job basically?
So he came to Portlaoise of all places and from there he set up a business and he was a door-to-door salesman. He called it back then on the tick, so it was all credit based. So he would visit a home and at that time, the lady of the home would say, "Oh, Mr. Sood, my daughter is making her communion. We need a communion dress. We need hair dryers are in fashion. We'd like one of them. We'd like a new carpet." And my dad would make the list and he would source all the goods and deliver them.
So he left Portlaoise then. He set up the shop in Newbridge.
Yes. He ran a general drapery store, as you would call it back then. So he sold everything from shoes to fashion to ladies' underwear, jewellery.
And that would have been very much a part of your life growing up, the shop and all of that.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, those were, they were really great, great times growing up in this, in the shop. There was six of us. I'm one of six kids and we lived on top of the store. Be it that we were, we were wild, I would say. We would get great fun out of from throwing eggs from the top window of our bedroom on top of some of the customers coming into the store. But, you know, my dad always, you know, he never really gave out to us about that. He'd say, just don't do it. Or
yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
And as an Indian family then in Newbridge, particularly for your parents when they first went there, there wouldn't have been many families from anywhere outside of Ireland at that time.
There wasn't. I think we were the only Asian or Indian family in the town at that time. So we did stand out. but my parents made a really, really great effort that we grew up being Irish, not Indian. So at home, my mother would speak Hindi to us. We would answer her in English and my father would speak English to us. So we did have a lot of our Indian traditions at home, but outside of the house, my dad especially encouraged us to have Irish friends, behave like Irish kids, not Indian kids. So that would be, say, myself and my sister. He would encourage us to have a boyfriend and an Irish boyfriend, and equally my brothers too. So he wanted us to be fully integrated and be accepted as Irish.
And how did your mam settle, given that it was probably more your dad's idea to come here? Was it a big adjustment for her?
It was, absolutely. I mean, still today she you know, she can speak English, but she prefers to speak her own language still, and her English would be very broken. But she understands everything. I suppose she's happy. She's had she has a good life here. All of her children are here. She's had six kids. None of us have emigrated. We all live within, you know, I live up the road from them. My other siblings live 30 kilometres away. So I suppose she's happy.
Was she quite traditional going around Portlaoise or Newbridge in traditional Indian clothes? Or
I remember one instance when she was going to take her driving test and she went to the driving test dressed in traditional Irish clothes. So she was wearing just trousers and a top, and she failed. My father said to her, "You know, Santosh, why not put on your Indian sari for your next driving test?" So that's what she did, and she stepped into the car and she passed.
And that was it.
And that was it. And, you know, can you imagine back then, 50 years ago, walking down the streets of Port Leash, this Indian woman dressed head to toe in a sari with a bindi on her head. She was certainly stopping the traffic.
Yeah. And for you then, with the business and the shop and all of that, apart from the fact that you probably would have got lots of good clothes if your dad was selling all kinds of good gear and all that kind of thing, that would have been a bonus, I suppose.
It definitely was. We were always the first children to have, you know, I had a pair of Oxford Doc Martens, Levi's jeans, any colour, any shape, you know, stonewashed, flared. But we certainly were always ahead of the fashion.
Did you learn a lot about business from your dad and from how he ran the shop?
I did. I mean, my father retired when he was 64, and he never, as far as I can remember growing up, he never once missed a single day of work. He worked 6 days a week. He took every Tuesday off, and every Sunday he did the buying for the store. And on Tuesdays, every Tuesday, my father would take us out of school. We got the day off. And that was simply to go up to Dublin, go shopping, go out for lunch, and that was our day off. And that I really remember, you know, and I cherished those times and those memories.
It was his day off, so he wanted to make sure that he got to spend it with you.
Exactly, yes.
Of your brothers, your siblings, are many of them involved in business? Were they interested in going down that route?
So all of my siblings are self-employed.
All of them?
All of them, yeah. And also my husband comes from a self-employed background.
Your husband, is he a local Newbridge man?
He is. He's from Newbridge, yeah, Porrick. So I would have grown up with him. He's actually one of my brother's best friends.
So that's how you met?
Well, I grew up with him. So his parents' store, they were photographers and they had a photography studio. And that was literally across the road from my parents' store.
It was almost inevitable, was it?
No, but my eldest brother, he did the same. He married my sister's best friend, and their parents had a store around the corner from my parents' store.
You didn't travel very far, did you?
No, but two of my siblings, one of them married a lady from Tralee, and the other, my sister, married a man from Tuam.
They're long distance adventures, yes, by the family standards. And your husband then, the family background was in photography, and of course you went into business together, very high end portraits.
So we ran a portrait photography studio, and yes, it was high end in so far as we only sold framed wall portraits. So we didn't sell digital files. Digital photography was just starting to come in. Everything we did, we printed all of our images in-house on museum-grade Hannemühle archival paper. We framed and finished them in-house with museum-grade glass. So it was absolutely the best quality. And then in 2008, the recession hit.
Was that very dramatic, very sudden, the impact on the business?
It was. We were a luxury, high-end business. We weren't essential. So we didn't even do wedding photography. We lost pretty much, I would say, 75% of our business that year.
So that was a real shock to the system
then. It was, yes. I was expecting my fifth child. So here we were, husband and wife working together, both eating out of the same pot. And pretty much, you know, within 6 months, we'd lost 75% of our business.
Now, of course, the business that you have now, how did that come about?
So Pestle and Mortar came about through the photography business. When the recession hit, we got very involved in education, so the education of professional photographers. With a bit of luck, and I suppose being in the right place at the right time, my husband had won European Portrait Photographer of the Year, which is a really highly recognised award. So he became quite well known in the photography world. Our studio got recognised as a really good business model, the way we ran our business, how profitable it had been pre-recession, and we got asked to speak at photography conferences all around the world. So through travelling and through speaking at photography conferences, my eyes were opened. So no longer was I sitting in a studio in Newbridge in DC Photographic, day in and day out. Now I was travelling every state of America, all around France, all around Germany, speaking at photography conferences with my husband and seeing how business is done.
Did you feel that, look, this is great, we've got a lot to offer, we can give these talks and show people how you can make a good living and run a good profitable business from photography, which I'd say is often the challenge. People, it's a passion and they might not be the best on the business side. But did you feel that this can't last forever either? I need to find something else.
Well, I suppose we always thought on our feet and we were always thought ahead. So we knew, we got to know a lot of the speakers at those conferences, and we knew that, you know, the life kind of span of a speaker is between 3 to 5 years. And we knew that. So we were always working within that time frame of, OK, we've a year done. We probably have two more. If we're really good, we might have five. Do we want to do it for five? Probably not. You know, we were always looking for different ideas.
So you came up with the idea of a skincare range, a skincare business.
It was while teaching at these photography conferences, I noticed, I got to see the world of commercial photography, and there I got to see how makeup artists prepped model skin before a shoot, and these models didn't necessarily have great skin. And I noticed that. And they were using creams and lotions and potions that all had an ingredient called hyaluronic acid present in them. So I spotted this. I did my research. My sister, she studied biochemistry. I consulted with her, asked her about the ingredient. Does it work or not? She told me it does work, actually.
You named the ingredient there. It doesn't sound good.
No.
It sounds more like a bad thing than a good thing. What does it do?
So hyaluronic acid it's naturally present in your bodies, but as you age, it depletes. So if you think of a baby, say at 9 or 10 months, their cheeks are always really plump and squidgy. And it's the hyaluronic acid present in their bodies that gives them that plumpness.
So it is a good thing then?
Yes.
And you wanted to figure out how you could make that, basically, yeah, so and sell it your own version.
Yeah, so I discovered that most people's skin problems are that they have dull, dehydrated or dry skin.
So when you came up with the solution and the product, you can have a great product, but it's that business problem of how do I let people know I exist? How do I let them know it's here? How do I sell it? What did you do?
So from the beginning, myself and Pore created he built the website, I wrote the copy. He took the photographs and we launched it online, and it was purely built on a word of mouth following.
And what about social media and influencers? Did you go to them? Are they a valuable resource? Do they work?
At the very beginning, we didn't. And most recently now, in the last kind of 2 years, we use influencers. Influencers are definitely, they're really important to our business.
Is that expensive as a form of marketing?
It is, but...
What does it cost?
It can cost anything from 300 euro to 10,000 to 30,000. It depends how much you want to pay.
Well, this isn't for an ad. This is for an endorsement, is
yes.
it? An Instagram influencer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
10,000 or 30,000
mm-hmm.
in Ireland?
Yes.
Would some people charge that?
Yes.
And would many people pay that?
Yes.
Did you?
No, we've never paid that much. But I do know that they do get paid that much. Because, you see, you have to remember, Richard, that the days of putting an ad in a magazine and paying for it, I think that the influencers have replaced that.
So as somebody who spent 28 years working and writing in the print media, that's like a shot right through my heart when you say it's over, it doesn't work anymore.
But that it's over, it doesn't work anymore. Well, with marketing, where are people's eyes? They're on social media. It's all about social influence.
The business then, in terms of sales channels, you would have targeted social media and online for marketing. How have the sales gone and where have they come from?
So our own, we have our own online store, which is doing really, really well. So from the pandemic, our business is actually up.
What's the behavioural change there as to why it's up?
Yeah, I think that women are, they're at home now, as everybody is. So they're having much more makeup-free days than they ever would have had in their lives. So they're seeing their skin for what it is.
You've had inquiries and sales channel outlets from more traditional stores as well.
We have retail partners in America, like we stock in Bloomingdale's, we stock in the UK in all the Harvey Nichols stores. We are in over 25 countries. So our growth is very controlled. So we don't want to just explode. We want to control that growth and see what channel it would be best to grow in. So, for example, if we had opened up thousands of retail stores last year, we would possibly be in trouble now.
And what's it like working together with your husband? Good, usually good, sometimes not so good. Do you have any creative differences, arguments or anything like that?
No, he's the creative one. No.
You have to pull him down to earth. Do you? You crunch the numbers.
No, I mean, we get on really well.
Are you similar in your outlooks?
Yes. Well, in our outlooks, I mean, we would have the same goals, certainly. And we're very driven and hungry to succeed and positive.
When you say about positive, one of the things that people often talk about, less so now, but it's still there, about setting up businesses in Ireland, is that they come across negativity and people who say, oh, that'll never work. Something's wrong with that. Did you guys encounter that and how did you deal with it?
When we first launched our product, we didn't tell anybody about it. For the simple reason, people, they're very quick to knock you down. So they would be very quick to say, but you don't know anything about skincare. How can you launch a skincare brand? Or how can you launch a skincare brand with only one product? So, okay, I have thick skin. I'm one of six children. Words will never hurt me. But still, I...
And do you think part of that is coming from a big family?
Definitely, yes.
You're a bit more robust.
Yes. You have to be able to take a slagging. Yeah, certainly so. But, you know, we kept the idea to ourselves until we launched. If you believe in something, you really believe and you believe that it's going to succeed, irrespective of what anybody else says.
The name Pestle and Mortar, where does that come from?
So a pestle and mortar is an implement that you use to grind down herbs and spices. And my grandfather, so my dad's dad, he was the medicine man in India. And my dad's brother, he still practices in the same spot today. So natural healing goes back in my family for over 100 years.
So did your dad have any of those medicine tricks that he was able to pass on to you?
He did, Richard. One of them I can distinctly remember was anytime, because he was so focused on our study and any exams that came up, in particularly, I would get very nervous. So before any exam, he would take us into the living room where there is a picture of one of our Hindu gods, and he would feed us a spoon of natural yogurt, which was a live culture that he makes. Or he would have made, yeah, and he still makes today.
And how are your parents getting on during this coronavirus crisis?
My parents are great. They miss having the family around. So their home would have been, you know, the heart of where we would all meet. They're brilliant cooks. Food is a huge part of our family and our get-togethers. Hopefully this will be over soon and we can get back to having our curries and our get-togethers soon.
Absolutely. Sonia Deasy, founder and managing director of Pestle and Mortar, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Richard.